Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Delta X podcast with Ellen Hsu. These are conversations with changemakers, innovators, and self-starters who have made their mark on the world at a young age, breaking down the journeys of those who are changing the status quo and building the future today. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Delta X Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Hsu, and this week we're going to talk about a game that I have a strong feeling that many people are looking forward to playing. It's the popular indie board game in the United States, and it's being produced by a company called Delta X Games, LLC. It's called The Resistance, and I thought I would talk about the game with you. So I went ahead and created a YouTube channel about it, as well as some links for those of you who might check out the game. All right, if that intro seemed a bit out of the ordinary, that's because it was actually generated by GPT-2 text. And today's episode is actually going to be all about disinformation and GPT-3. Today, we're going to be having another special podcast episode covering Black Hat USA 2021, which happened earlier this month. And I'm really privileged to have with me today Micah Musser and Drew Lund at the Center for Security and Emerging Technology, which is a think tank at Georgetown University. And they presented Disinformation at Scale using GPT-3 for information operations at Black Hat. And so for those of you who may not be familiar with GPT-3, last year, it was developed by OpenAI, and it's currently the largest and most powerful natural language model in the world. So let's get into it. And thank you so much, Micah and Drew, for coming on today.
Thanks for hosting us.
Great to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, great to have both of you on. I know your presentation at Black Hat was also focused on GPT-3 and its potential for disinformation. So could you tell me a little bit more about what your presentation was all about, and maybe even a high-level overview for our audience members who weren't able to listen to it live?
GPT-3 is this very powerful language model. There's GPT-2 that Ellen introduced at the beginning of the show that's pretty good. It's almost convincing, and GPT-3 is a big step above that. It's not perfect, but it's pretty convincing, even more convincing. And the way that I like to say it is that in order to get such a powerful AI model trained, you have to go digging around on the internet to find enough written words to train it. And along with the good that's written on the internet, there's plenty of bad. And OpenAI gave us the opportunity to play with GPT-3 before it's gone public and find out just how bad is the bad in there.
So, in our research, essentially what we did is we used our access to GPT-3 and we spent a couple months trying to figure out what types of text might a disinformation operator want to generate, and can GPT-3 perform those tasks. And we studied about six different tasks. They ranged from very simple, like, here's a couple of anti-vax tweets, can you make more? To much more complex things like, say, here's a breaking news story. Can you take the facts within it and spin it in a way that is going to be more beneficial to, say, Republicans or Democrats, while like keeping the core news content there? We saw that GPT-3 can do at least some of those tasks pretty well. And even the ones that it can't do itself, we were confident that with a human sort of guiding it and editing its outputs, you could significantly speed up the amount of time it would take a human to write it themselves.
I see. Yeah. And I know you mentioned GPT-3. And so for listeners who may not be as familiar with, AI or how natural language models work, how would you explain, the technology that powers it? This is pretty exciting things that you can do with spinning out like human writable text.
Sure. Yes. So I like to tell people that GPT-3 is basically autocomplete on steroids. the main difference is that it's not just predicting the next word. It'll predict the next word and then it'll iteratively keep predicting the next word, and it can run for about 800 words at a time. The architecture is something called a transformer, is the basic architecture that it relies on. The details there really aren't that important. And since we weren't on the team that actually built the thing, we might not be the best position to answer every little question about it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that analogy of autocomplete on steroids. And, you know, autocomplete can fix our grammar issues, but having somebody that can write out complete sentences is something, you know, another step up on that. But along the same track of, you know, cybersecurity and AI, how can, you know, cybersecurity be used in translation to GPT-3, or what are its applications to this field of study of AI?
Well, right now, what we're trying to do is just evaluate the risk. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be pretty compelling. What we also kind of realized from GPT-3, other experiments more than our own, but also some of our own, was that it's very difficult for humans to tell the difference between human written things and GPT-3 written things. And it seems to be actually particularly bad for disinformation, where a lot of the human disinformation authors aren't held to the highest grammatical standard themselves, or even consistency standards. And so if GPT-3 makes mistakes sometimes, it's just par for the course in disinformation and makes it even harder for us to filter in and out. Okay, so that's not a very promising avenue for defense. But if you're going to try to do this sort of disinformation at the scales that GPT-3 is capable of, then you're going to need a whole lot of infrastructure in order to distribute that. You'll need, if you're going to do it on reputable platforms anyway, you're going to need a very large number of accounts that need to be deniable or minimally traceable. And that's a challenge. That's an opportunity for defense.
I'll add to one thing Drew's talking about a little bit here on the, so one of the questions here is, how do you detect if something came from GPT-3 or like an AI instead of an actual human? And so up until pretty recently, there were some tools that could kind of do this. There's one out there called Glitter, which essentially the way it works is it reads through a text and it calculates, you know, what was the probability of the last word. And you find that for actual human speech, you'll get words that are like very unlikely. When, as people talk, there's a sort of peculiar distribution of what was the likelihood of the next word. And with until recently, like that didn't kind of hold for some of the natural language models. So if you look at like GPT-2 small, it almost always picks like one of the five most common next words or most likely next words, even if you try to make it fairly random, right? So that was thought like, oh, maybe this is a tool for detecting. But as the models get bigger, that sort of disappears, and they do insert more of those very unlikely words. And in fact, with GPT-3, you can actually control the randomness of the next word. So, you know, those sorts of tools that were working a little bit, they probably aren't going to be great at catching GPT-3 stuff, certainly not on something the length of a tweet. You could detect it at all. Our guess is like you would probably need at least a couple paragraphs of text to start finding any sort of statistical signature. Mm-hmm. So that all creates challenges when you're thinking about detecting from the text itself, which is why, like, to catch disinformation, even today, oftentimes companies rely way more on behavioral signals from accounts that are behaving weirdly rather than like the semantic content of what they say.
Mm-hmm. And how hard is it today for a human to be able to detect the differences between something that GPT-3 or another language model is generating versus something that they believe a human has written?
So it can be pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we had tried is I mentioned that sort of rewriting task of take a breaking news story and rewrite it from a different slant. And we had a bunch of our colleagues at CSET read that. We did, I think, about 16 of these. We had them read and sort of say, do you think it's real or not? How biased do you think it is? Those sorts of questions. And a lot of the time they could tell the difference. But there were a couple that tripped up the majority of people, about three or four, I think. The majority of people thought they were more likely real than not.
Uh-huh.
And that was like a particularly hard task. Even for a human, it would be kind of hard to say, hey, like find a way to spin this breaking news story. When OpenAI first came out with this model and they sort of just generated like some news blurbs, I think, the best performing ones fooled up to about 68% of humans who thought that it was written by a human and not a machine. And even the worst performing ones fooled something in the 30% range of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can definitely see how this could be a problem for disinformation when it's really hard to tell the difference, even for such a challenging task. And it's very fascinating what you guys are working on in terms of bringing up the different sides of this and running experiments on GPT-3 as well. But I'm curious too, among the people who could tell the difference or among the signals that they got for the ones that, you know, seemed fake, what were these types of things that made people think that it was written by an AI? And how can we also be more aware of something that an AI might have written instead of an actual human?
So I'll answer that one real quick too. It's very tricky because in that particular experiment, we basically didn't do any filtering. Mm-hmm. And sometimes GPT-3 would trip up in very obvious ways. One time talking about the Black Lives Matter protests at Lafayette Square in 2020, it referred to Trump as Mayor Trump, which is like kind of a dead giveaway that, mm-hmm. that something's not quite right here. But if you're like a human disinformation operator, all it takes to prevent that sort of thing is don't hook GPT-3 directly up to social media. Just have someone like scan it in between. And that sort of mistake is a simple matter of replacing one word. So even the ways that people had of like detecting it, they probably are going to break down pretty easily if a human is anywhere in the loop doing any sort of validation on what GPT-3 is saying. I don't really think you can train people to detect GPT-3 or not. You can maybe train them to detect like disinformation or not, regardless of whether a human or a machine wrote it. But the difference between the human and the machine is I think probably going to become vanishingly small.
One of the other questions that's slightly different is how do you convince people whether or not to trust GPT-3? Aside from that, even if you know it's written by GPT-3, should it? Will you dismiss it or not? It's a weird compulsion that I experience working with GPT-3, and I suspect others do too, where you get it to write things. You're like, this has read everything on the internet. It knows a lot of stuff. What it's saying must be right. And sometimes it is, sometimes it's very impressively is, and sometimes it just makes things up and it's not always obvious which it's doing.
Yeah, it's probably worth underscoring here that like these language models, what they're trained to do is predict the next word, essentially. And sometimes like that means that they are incentivized to say truthful things. So for instance, like the capital of the United States is most of the time gonna be followed by Washington, DC. It's probably not gonna be followed by Ottawa. So like just because like one of those is more common than the other, GPT-3 is probably gonna learn to say something truthful. But there's a lot of topics where like the majority of what gets said online is not exactly truthful. And in those contexts, GPT-3, you know, insofar as like we anthropomorphize it a little bit, it has no incentive. Nothing is pushing it towards the truthful statement. Sometimes if you like set up your input in a certain way and you sort of tell it you're looking for a truthful answer, it gets better with that, but it's hard to like verify that it isn't just making something up anyway.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned also that you briefly mentioned what GPT-3 is designed to do. So I know we talked a lot about disinformation and all the negative things that GPT-3 can cause, but what was the actual reason that it was designed, it was created for, and what are some ways that can actually be used for, to better humanity?
Well, it was designed to do all of the things. At least be one step closer to an AI that can do all of the things. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that if an artificial intelligence can write, then you could convert writing into all sorts of tasks, almost everything there is. And so this is just one step along the path that OpenAI is trying to take towards developing this artificial general intelligence. There are still a long way to go, but that's the idea.
I think it's also probably the case that OpenAI didn't fully anticipate all the applications they would find once they built it. Mm-hmm. So they've just released Codex, which is a tool that can like write code for you if you give it some instructions. And that, as far as I understand, is like either paired with GPT-3 or it's like a fine-tuned model of GPT-3. But it's based on GPT-3 in some capacity. I'm not sure exactly what the relationship is. So those sorts of like, once you have a model that can understand semantic relationships and like linguistic structures, there's a lot of stuff that takes on that form. Code does, music does, even a pure text model can be pretty useful. You can get it to do things like automate a chatbot for a company that has, you know, a lot of customers who like want to talk about issues they have. So there is a pretty wide range of application. OpenAI is trying to like have people use these tools through it. Mm-hmm. But there's also an increasing number of other models out there that are sort of being open sourced that OpenAI does not have control of, which adds like another whole wrinkle to this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we start to see this technology become more accessible, become like, you know, open to the public, what do you think are maybe some additional applications or additional ways that GPT-3 or these types of language models are going to be used that we may not be expecting?
That's a big question. It's hard to expect the ones that we aren't expecting. Mm-hmm. But I think that people might use it as a personal assistant, some, like, what's the answer to this, Alexa? I think that it'll be used a lot like that. Mm-hmm. which it's somewhat capable of doing, but I feel like it could use a bit more curation. And I think that could, like we talked earlier, it's hard to tell if it's when it's saying things that you should listen to and when it's not, but it's really compelling to want to ask it things that maybe I shouldn't be asking it, or that I shouldn't be trusting it to answer accurately.
Oftentimes I caution people to not really sort of buy the hype around like, oh, this AI can do anything. GPT-3 can do anything, but there's no guarantee it'll do it well. I don't know. Like, we'll probably see people trying to use it for dozens and dozens of tasks. My guess would be it might become integrated into a lot of different industries, like contracts in law are pretty formulaic. A lot of it is based on boilerplate already, but you could maybe like get GPT-3 to you know, cover 50% of the remaining work that has to be done by humans. For legal contracts, you could maybe like get it to help musicians. They could say like, oh, like here's my melody, you know, compose a harmony to go with this or something. It's probably not a substitute for very much creative work, but it's very possible that people will find ways to use it to complement what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the next question I'm curious about, maybe a little bit off the rails. So I just wanted to see what your opinions are. But as we're talking about, you know, GPT-3 possibly being used to, you know, compose music, or currently it can be like the Codex is writing code or writing text. Do you think that GPT-3 can be creative, or is it solely based on, you know, the data it's trained upon?
My instinct would be to say, in humans, I'm not sure that there's a sharp line between like creativity in a pure sense and like, you know, what we're quote unquote trained on. Mm-hmm. Every creative artist has lots of influences. And I think it's you could analogize GPT-3 in exactly the same way. I'm not quite sure that I would. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. But I don't see like a first order reason why what it's doing couldn't count as creativity just as much as like an artist pulling from an inspiration of their own.
I've argued against creativity in GPT-3, but I haven't been convinced by my arguments. And so I don't have an answer. And I guess that's all I can say about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it is more of a philosophical question, but thanks for also offering your opinions on it. I think it's interesting what Micah mentioned too, is as humans, we're also, you know, we get all the sensory input, all this data around us as we're going about our experiences. And like, who knows how much of our own unique ideas or what we consider to be creative is actually a byproduct of, you know, all the data that we've received as well. But I think one final question I want to ask both of you. I know on that kind of blackboard behind you, Drew, you also have some of this like future trends. So could you talk more about, you know, the future trends of AI and also cybersecurity?
For GPT-3, language models keep getting bigger. So eventually there might be a GPT-4 and a GPT-5, but they also keep getting much more expensive. So it's not clear that the financials will work out in order for some company to want to make a GPT-5. Probably a 4 will come. For cybersecurity in general, that's a very big question. We've got a bunch of different reports separately on that we spend actually a lot more time working on. But I the way that I'm viewing it is that there are lots of pieces of cybersecurity. There's vulnerability discovery, there's patching, there's phishing, there's intrusion detection, there's exploit creation, all kinds of different, and each of those will be affected by AI in different ways, some of which will be enhanced, some of which will favor offense, some of which will favor defense, some of which won't really change much at all. And each one of those kind of needs to be treated by itself. And I don't have a definitive answer for who wins in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'll say on the AI side, models keep getting bigger. Although, interestingly, GPT-4 has not come out yet. And I believe it's been longer since GPT-3 came out than it was between GPT-2 and GPT-3. More and more, I think OpenAI is trying to find ways to operationalize GPT-3 for like specific applications rather than making like the next really, really big one. Although like maybe tomorrow GPT-4 will be announced and I'll have to eat my words. So we don't fully know. I do think there's been, GPT-3 is one example of this, but you also have Clip, also from OpenAI. You have BERT. You have these big models that increasingly can do multiple types of tasks or that are very multimodal in nature. And that's sort of new. Like that's opening up a new frontier that I think a lot of people are very excited about. On the cybersecurity side, generally, I think like the future of cybersecurity, networks get bigger and bigger, and there's more and more data to process. And so their cyber defense, I think, tends to rely more and more on like algorithms and potentially ML and AI as time goes on. But AI has lots of weak spots. You can, like, there are adversarial examples. There are lots of ways to sort of make them break in unexpected ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that'll be the dominant story of cybersecurity in the near future, but I think that might be an area to watch, is how AI gets increasingly like integrated into cybersecurity and what people try to do to find a way around those AI systems, because that might expose almost like a whole new type of vulnerability that cyber defenders aren't traditionally used to thinking about and having to account for.
Awesome. Yeah. And as we're reaching the end of the podcast as well, would any of you like to add anything, you know, maybe I didn't ask a question that you would have liked to talk about or a specific topic or just in general, last final message you want to leave with our listeners today? We can go with Drew first.
Well, I think we covered it pretty well. I think that I would say this is a really exciting and fast moving frontier. We, And it's been it's a struggle for the technologists to keep up with it. It's an even bigger struggle for the policymakers to keep up with it. And that's where we're trying to spend a lot of our focus.
I would say, I guess, to the, you know, to all the listeners, mutually exclusive advice for you. On the one hand, I don't believe anything you read online. And on the other hand, don't just dismiss everything you read online because you assume it's a troll. So that's my advice to listeners. Make of that what you will.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great close of the podcast as well, and some great advice. But just wanted to say thank you so much, Micah and Drew, for coming on. And, you know, like we've talked about a lot of things, GPT-3, disinformation, what you guys are working on as well, with studying the intersection of cybersecurity and AI. So thank you for taking the time for coming on and sharing your knowledge about this exciting field.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Awesome. And for all the listeners, I'll link below some resources below. And who knows, maybe I'll also use GPT-3 to help me write this podcast description and show notes. And also link below a newsletter that you can subscribe to receive these podcasts every 2 weeks. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Delta X Podcast with Ellen Hsu. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.